Breakfast is a tense situation. We all meet in the kitchen and sit at the table talking amongst our five until Hawk stomps in, the clap of his hooves against the stone floor obnoxiously loud. Meriden flinches with each step, and I force myself to remain stiffly straight, my posture unbending as his chair screeches against the stone, and then he flings himself down into his seat at the head of the table. The nestmaid hands him a bowl of porridge, and he angrily stirs it, glaring in my direction. I ignore him.
Where's Magpie?
He asks, flinging his spoon down.
Why isn't she with you?
She's sleeping in, Lark says, since nothing's getting done today.
Is she drunk?
Hawk snarls, glaring at her. Lark, bless her soul, glares back at him. No, and it's fucking rude of you to even ask that. You're rather moon-touched at the moment, aren't you? Go jerk off or something. I pay great attention to my food, the tension in the room palpable. I'm pretty sure that Hawk looks at me a few times, but I ignore him, and he picks up his bowl, chugs his porridge, slams it down, and storms out of the room. A moment later, he thunders back in and points at Lark.
Tell Magpie I'm going to Guild headquarters, and if she leaves again without notifying me, we're no longer partners. Understand?
Understood. He stomps back out again, only to return one more time. This time he leans over my chair, all menace and male fury.
And you're sleeping with me tonight. I don't want you running off every single time we argue. Got it?
Say please. My heart is racing like a rabbit's. I expect him to blow up at me, to lose his temper and shout, because his hormones are all over the place. But he can't just order me around, not after avoiding me himself. His nostrils flare, and he leans in even closer.
Please.
I nod. He gives one of those indignant, annoyed snorts that only a Taurian can, and then storms back out of the room again. Well, the moon is hitting him hard, Lark says, her eyes wide with did-you-just-see-that amusement. No wonder all the other Taurians are out of town or hitting the sex district.
They're out of town? Meriden asks. And Kip tilts his head, equally inquisitive.
Oh, yeah. You guys don't know about the conquest moon?
Locke hoots.
Man, is it a story. If you ever see a Taurian with red eyes, get out of his way or you'll get your ass pounded into the ground.
They fight?
Meriden asks again. No, I mean, they'll fuck anything moving. Your ass pounded into the ground is literally your ass pounding into the ground.
Lark punctuates each word with a punch of her fist into her palm, oblivious to the way I'm trying to ignore her.
No orifice is safe. We get the idea. Gwenna cuts in sharply. Thank you. All I'm saying is that the conquest moon is probably striking him hard.
She wiggles her brows at me.
That why you slept upstairs, Asbeth? Couldn't sleep for the thing poking you in the backside?
I ignore that and spare a slice of ham with my knife, then nibble on it. Where's your aunt this morning?
Drunk, Lark says.
Meriden gasps. But you told Hawk. Lark shushes her, glancing at the door.
I know what I told him, but we really don't need them fighting when he's this close to the conquest moon. He's not going to be reasonable. Just ask Asbeth.
He's not reasonable, I agree, and leave it at that. We need Magpie, drunk or not, and right now I'm going to take her side. If she's breaking rules already, what's a few more? I need the other half of the ring that's down below to save my neck. Oh, and to save my father, and the hold. But I'm vastly more interested in keeping myself alive, if I'm being honest. I'm not interested in being the heir or running things. Staying alive, though, that has my full interest.
Look, it's fine, Lark says, getting up from the table and tossing her bowl onto the counter.
The nest maid currently cleaning the kitchen frowns at her, and Gwenna gives the woman a look of sympathy.
Until we get permission to go into the drop again, it's not like we can do anything. No one's going to be training because any teacher worth their coin is going to have their students combing through the ruins right now instead of learning lessons. Because the guild is driven by money first, learning second.
She's right. In my hunger to join the guild to get to live my artifact-strewn fantasies, I always forget that the guild isn't nearly as interested in the history of Prel as they are in selling it. They're a guild of vultures, picking over the carcass of something long dead. I suppose we could train ourselves. Gwenna makes a face.
I am not going to run the obstacle course on my own for fun.
Kip shakes his head, too. I could teach you some of the more common Prelian glyphs, I offer. I read a delightful book about forgeries once that had sketches showing the great lengths that forgers will go to in order to pass off their items. Nock makes a face.
Wow, that sounds really exciting, said no one ever.
She shakes her head and pulls out a series of parchment envelopes, each one sealed with wax.
Or we could deliver these around the city.
What are they? I ask, taking one. The seal is that of a bird, but it's been stamped messily and a little difficult to determine what bird.
Missives from my aunt, demanding that we be allowed back into the drop. We're going to appeal to local authorities and the king's vizier to override the guild's decision.
She hands them out to the rest of us. My jaw drops. The guild already made a decision?
No, but the answer is always the same. It's never in the favor of the five. The guild steps in and lets their flunkies take over if there's even a sniff of treasure.
Gwenna glances over at me, uneasy. She takes an envelope and turns it over, running her finger over the seal.
So Magpie decided to write appeals already?
Oh no, that was all me, Lark says. I went into her room and borrowed her seal.
Kip flicks the envelope away and slaps his tail on the table.
Don't you sass me, lizard,
Lark retorts. Lark, Meriden scolds. He's right to be upset at you. We can't go forging documents.
It's not a forgery if Aunt Magpie doesn't remember doing them or not.
Her smile is bright.
And do you guys have a better solution? Because how things look right now, my aunt isn't going to be training much. Hawk's got blue balls until the God's Conquest Moon is out of his system. And guild rules won't let us go do anything fun without a chaperone. Unless you can materialize one, we're going to be practicing with our swords and running drills with rock-laden backpacks for the next season. With these two chuckleheads leading our team, we're not going to pass. We're going to end up as repeaters unless we're absolutely perfect because we're women and lizards.
She nods at Kip.
No offense.
He nods back. Meriden picks up one of the envelopes. I heard that the last time one of the nobles filed a special waiver for guild teams, someone found a really important horn, and that the team of students that found it got to bypass their test. They were allowed into the guild on the strength of that one find alone.
Now Gwenna's looking at me. You know more about old Prel than anyone else. Is that true?
I rack my brain, thinking hard. A horn. A horn. A horn.
I can't think of any horns.
A horn of water? She asks, shrugging. That's all I remember.
My father was very impressed with it and talked about it for weeks. He bid on it, but a sea lord to the south of us paid an astonishing fee for it. Oh, I gasp as a memory floods in. I remember now, the conch of the tides. Meriden snaps her fingers. That's it.
What's the conch of the tides? Gwenna asks. Why is the tide so important?
The conch of the tides is ideal protection for a sea fortress, I point out. It didn't even need a word of magic to activate it. If you blew on it, the tide would change. I recall that the holder who acquired it lives upon an island where his shoreline is only available at low tide. He's the safest holder alive now.
And why my father wanted it, Meriden agrees. Arhold makes most of its income from low tide farming for shells and cockles because of the Coverin. He was very disappointed.
She eyes me speculatively.
You certainly know a lot about holders.
I exchange a look with Gwenna. It's time to come clean. I turn the envelope in my hands, running a finger along the edge.
I haven't been entirely truthful with all of you, I admit. I'm not a merchant's daughter.
I was wondering when you were going to speak up, Meriden says. Honori Hold, right?
32. Asbeth. Meriden has known the whole time. I'm a little shocked, but I shouldn't be. Meriden is smart, and she sees everything that's going on. That she keeps her secrets without spilling them makes her all the wiser, because secrets are power. But as I confess the truth about how and why I'm here, Lark's jaw drops and continues to drop lower, and Kip looks equally agitated. Once my story is told, I produce the ring from inside my corset and set it on the table, deciding to keep Gwenna's name out of it.
I managed to snatch this from down below.
No, you didn't, Meriden continues. I saw everything. If we're telling truths, tell all of them. We're all in this together.
I took it, Gwenna says. Asbeth's protecting me because she's a good person, because she knows I'm worried.
You two are noble, holder blood, she gestures at me and Meriden.
I'm a servant. Who do you think they'll come after if we're discovered?
Meriden hesitates and then nods.
I didn't hear anything, Locke drawls. Did you, Kip?
Kip gives his head a quick shake.
Nothing.
Gwenna manages a little smile.
Thank you.
Meriden reaches out to me, her hand palm up on the table.
I want you to know that your secrets are safe with me, Asbeth. There's nothing I want more than to join the guild. We need all five of us for that. And I won't say anything to my family, either, if you're worried. If I did, they'd probably attempt to take over your father's hold, and then send me promptly back to the Convent of Divine Silence.
She makes a face.
My situation is slightly different from yours, but no less awful.
We're in this together, Locke declares, and slaps her hand down atop Meriden's.
Gwenna drops her hand onto theirs, and I do the same. Kip places his atop mine, small and sticky. His little touch feels like a big deal.
Thank you, I tell them, and then feel the need to say more.
I know what we're doing is dangerous and illegal. I just want an artifact that's enough for my father to protect the hold, I tell them. If the ring will do it, that's all I need. Anything else can go to you guys. I know it's a lot to ask, and I wouldn't ask at all if my life wasn't on the line. No one's going to stop and ask me if I want to be my father's heir. They're just going to kill me. No questions asked.
How do you know your father won't gamble it away?
I don't.
I'll figure something out. Maybe I'll tell him it has a curse on it, and if it's sold or used for gambling, he'll be doomed.
Tell him it has an ass pox,
Lark says. Meriden gives her a strange look.
What is it with you and asses?
Lark shrugs.
Asses are funny.
Well,
Gwenna says in her no-nonsense voice. She picks up one of the envelopes and holds it aloft.
Should we deliver these, then? The sooner we get things started, the better.
We head out to deliver the appeals, and I try not to think about the fact that Magpie has no idea of what we're doing in her name. Like Lark said, if she thinks she did them, it can work in our favor, too. Lark has grown up in Vast Warren and knows her way around everything. She leads us to one manor house that looms high above the other houses in the area, a tall hedge separating him from his neighbors. The housekeeper takes the letter with a sniff, and something in me suspects it won't be looked at.
That's why we have multiples,
Lark replies cheerfully.
All we need is one person willing to override the guild.
The guild is so controlling, though. I don't see how. I'm about to protest this when Kip races ahead of our party down the street. His shell house bounces on his back as he trots away, and I look over at the others. Where's he going?
Meriden shrugs, and Gwenna does too.
Maybe he saw something suspicious?
Luck hurries after him, and I do the same, because it's not like Kip to dart off without us. He's the responsible one. We find him ahead in a market square near a fountain. He's met up with another Slitherskin, and as we approach, we can see them rubbing all over each other, their movements quick and frantic.
Oh, Lark shrugs. Give them a moment.
What are they doing?
Meriden asks, shielding her eyes politely.
It's nothing lewd,
Lark explains, relaxing. Her gaze rests on Meriden for a moment, then flicks over to me.
It's how Slitherskins got their names. They rub up against one another, and when they do, they transfer information. They can share memories through the touch of their skin, and that's how their people communicate. That's why he's so fussy about being grabbed.
How fascinating. I've never seen it until now, and the sight of it is a little slithery, all right. It looks downright obscene, but who am I to judge? I married a Taurian, and they have all kinds of strange customs, too. Thinking of Hawk and his people's customs make me think of the orgy in the alleyway, and my face gets hot and flushed. I wish he wasn't such a prick. I also wonder where he is right now. Probably storming the guild halls, looking for someone to give him a job to get out of the house. We stand by awkwardly a short distance away, as the two Slitherskins rub against each other with frantic, happy motions. Then they hug one last time and part, tails twining. Kip trots over to us, a look of contentment on his small lizardy face.
Old friend?
Gwenna asks. He shakes his head and then pauses. A flurry of gestures quickly follows as he tries to communicate with us, and it takes a few rounds, but we finally figure it out. The Slitherskin was a stranger, working for a traveling merchant. He saw Kip in his uniform, now unbuttoned and open to the waist, thanks to all the full-contact slithering, and wanted to tell him how proud he was of his fellow Slitherskin.
I am first,
Kip gestures to us.
You are?
I'm startled to hear this, but not entirely surprised. I haven't seen other Slitherskins around, and none of the guild's history books refer to Slitherskins in any way. They barely reference Taurians, and Magpie is the only woman I know of who has joined.
Kip lifts his chin, full of pride.
Bunch of horrid men,
Gwenna grumbles.
Don't like anyone who doesn't have the same equipment as them. The more I learn about this royal artifactual guild, the less I like it.
Which means it's all the more important that we join the guild, Meriden says.
These men need to realize that Slitherskins and women are just as competent as they are.
Gwenna grunts.
I'm silent. So much is riding on this that the guilt is becoming overwhelming. I'm going to ruin everyone's chances if it's found out that I have the ring, or that I'm a noble.
That's why a 5 is so important, Lark says, speaking up.
She puts a hand on my shoulder and one on Meriden's, drawing us closer in the middle of the street.
The guild wants to emphasize teamwork so 5s work together, but doing this has made us more than a team. We're friends. We have one another's backs. And we're going to join this fucking sausage party of a guild and turn it inside out.
We laugh at that, but I blink back tears again. Before leaving home, I had no friends. Now I have 4 of them, and it feels like I'm the richest person in all of Vastwarren. Once the last of the letters are delivered, we opt to head back to the dorm and train ourselves. Kip teaches Meriden and Lark some basic stabbing moves with short swords, and I go over a few of the more common Prelian glyphs with Gwenna in the kitchen. I want her to be able to recognize them, to give her an advantage over some of the men in the guild. We're basically waiting and passing time until something happens. Either Lark can approach her aunt and see if she'll help us with our plan, or we'll get permission to go back down to the drop due to the appeals we dropped off earlier today. Until then, all we can do is stay busy. The lovely thing about Prelian magic is that it's considered female, I tell Gwenna enthusiastically as I flick through a book I borrowed from Hawk's small store of guild tomes. I pause on a rendering of a common vase covered in glyphs and point it out. So, you're always going to see the glyph for a female if there's magic referenced. Her brows furrow.
What are you talking about?
When you reference magic, it's considered female, I explain, delighted to be able to talk about my favorite subject. And it was Prelian law that every object had to be labeled clearly with what it did for public safety. They were really very advanced with law for their time, so every object will have a statement of some sort as to what the magic is, and since it's referencing magic, you can look for the egg symbol around this particular glyph. The arrow over this figure means man, but when it's encased by an egg, it changes the symbol to woman.
Is the arrow supposed to be a cock?
Gwenna asks. Her blunt words make my face heat. Good gods, it seems I'm blushing all the time now. No, of course not. It's an arrow. At least, that's what scholars believe. They think that it references back to the time when men were hunters and would use arrows to feed and provide for their families.
Looks like a cock to me, she says, and then adds, I'm probably spending too much time around Lark.
Probably. Though now it looks a bit like a cock to me, too. The doors to the kitchen open, and Hawk strides in. Gwenna and I immediately grow quiet, watching as he marches over to the water pitcher and pours himself a drink. He looks dusty and dirty, as if he's been in the tunnels, but I don't want to ask. The last thing I need is a more cranky Hawk jumping down my throat. I'm sure I deserve some of the throat jumping, but not all of it. Hawk drinks his water, leaning against the counter, and I pretend to focus on the book in front of me, instead of my very large Taurian husband, who might possibly hate me. He'll just finish his beverage, I think, and then we'll be alone again and ready to continue our lessons.
Aspeth,
Hawk says.
We need to talk.
I put on my best gracious Holder's daughter smile. We are in the midst of a lesson.
Oh, it can wait.
Gwenna blurts out, betraying me. She jumps to her feet and moves to stand behind my chair. She leans in and whispers in my ear, Distract him, and I'll check on the situation with Magpie.
And then, with a brilliant smile, she leaves me alone with the moody Taurian. I give him an impatient look.
You decided now is the best time to talk, despite ordering me to sleep next to you tonight? It couldn't wait until then.
I didn't know if you were going to come to bed.
Because you don't trust me, right? I keep the words light and playful, even as they cut. He sighs heavily.
Because I wouldn't want to come to bed with me either. Whatever frustration or anger you're feeling right now, I deserve it.
I run a finger down the front of the book, not looking him in the eye. I don't know what to say to that. It certainly wasn't what I expected to hear from him. Was that an apology?
More of an explanation,
he says.
Can we go talk in our room?
Now I glance up at him, suspicious. Is this going to turn into another spy inquisition? But Gwenna did tell me to distract him.
Hells. I get to my feet, my chin held high. If you're a bore, I'm going to leave again. Fair warning.
If I'm a bore to you, I'll absolutely expect it,
he says, and moves to my side, putting a hand to the small of my back to lead me to our room. Standing this close to Hawk always makes me feel slightly breathless. I'm a big woman, tall and strong and the opposite of dainty, but his hand on the small of my back makes me feel delicate, like a thing to be protected. It's not something I'm used to, both the touch and the feeling of being something worth protecting. But I like it. And I hate that I like it, because it makes me feel vulnerable, like it can be used against me. We head down the hall from the kitchen and into Hawk's private chamber. Squeaker is curled up on the window seat, spreading orange cat hair all over the cushions. She yawns when we enter and stretches in place, but makes no effort to get up, and Hawk doesn't ask me to remove her. That means we're probably not going to get intimate. I can't decide if I'm disappointed or relieved. He gestures that I can sit on the bed, and I move to sit on the edge, clasping my hands in my lap. I'm doing my best to remain composed, but being alone with him brings on floods of memories and scandalous thoughts, and it's hard to concentrate. Hawk paces at the far side of the room, his tail flicking back and forth, and I notice that the sleeves of his shirt are rolled up, revealing bulging muscles. He's discarded his gilled jacket somewhere, too, and when he paces, I can see the fine, thick shape of his thighs and the rounded strength of his backside. If he's trying to appeal to me by simply looking intense and delectable, he's doing an excellent job. Hawk tugs on the ring that hangs from his broad nose.
Aspeth, I know I've behaved cruelly toward you.
That makes me pause. Cruelly? I'd say you were an ass, but I don't know if cruelty was involved.
I've thrown things in your face that I shouldn't have.
He shakes his head and paces some more.
I was furious that you were keeping secrets, that you didn't trust me, and of course everything is amplified thanks to the conquest moon's rising.
Oh, come on now. You can't blame everything on that. He turns and gives me a sharp look.
You don't know what it feels like.
I do not. I agree. But I've also done my best to be accommodating for the conquest moon time, and you've lashed out at me in private moments. That's not the conquest moon. That's you being a shit. His mouth tenses, and he tugs on the ring on his nose again.
I know, I just...
More pacing. I wait for him to answer, because he seems to be conflicted.
I just... This should be transactional between us, and it's not.
I tilt my head at him in surprise. Does he feel like I'm not holding up my end of the bargain? It's not. A low growl escapes him, and then he storms across the room to my side. Hawk leans over the bed, caging me in place as he puts his hands on either side of me.
I want you. More than I should.
My lips part.
No, that's not right.
He shakes his head, his horns swiveling dangerously, and then lifts his face to meet my gaze again.
I want you more than a teacher should want his student. I want you more than I should for a marriage of convenience, and that's the part that fucking bothers me.
It does? Why does that make my stupid heart flutter? He thinks I'm a spy, out trying to rob the guild of its riches or some nonsense.
It does bother me.
Hawk continues. He studies my face, his breath warming the air around us.
Because I think about you all the time. It's not just the conquest moon. I've felt its grip on me before. This is something else. If it was just the conquest moon, I wouldn't think about your smile. I wouldn't think about the way you laugh when you're trying to be polite and how different it is from when you're truly amused. I wouldn't think about you and that stupid cat of yours and how you lavish affection on it when you come home and it makes me jealous.
My cheeks heat. He's jealous of Squeaker?
I wouldn't be obsessed with the realization that I still owe you an orgasm from last night and how thinking about it has been distracting me all day long. I nearly fell off a drop earlier because I was thinking about the way your soft cunt clenched around my fingers and how it's going to feel when I'm deep inside you for the first time.
You were thinking about me today? I'm breathless at the thought. Why do I care? Yet I do. Terribly.
Couldn't stop thinking about you.
His hand trails up the inside of my thigh.
And how things left off last night. Figured I need to give you that orgasm or else it's going to continue to distract me.
I stop his hand before it can go up any farther. Is this you apologizing for last night? His gaze meets mine.
Would you accept an apology from me?
I swallow. Maybe. Depends on how good an apology it is. Hawk gives me a slow, lazy smile.
Toe-curling.
Oh, gods. My pulse thumps a response right between my legs.
I promised you I'd make you feel good.
He murmurs and leans in to nip the shell of my ear. He's incredibly gentle, and the feel of his teeth against my ear is more arousing than anything.
And I'm not holding up my end of the bargain. Moody or not, you being a holder's heiress or not, I need to be the husband you deserve.
His hand stops on the inside of my thigh, his thumb rubbing against me through the fabric.
Can I make you come, wife?
I bite back a moan. If I do, where does that leave us? You think I'm a spy? Hawk pauses.
I know you're not. I'm angry that you didn't trust me, hurt that you didn't. Probably more than a little pissed that I don't get to keep you after all is said and done. You're not a spy. I might not understand you or the way you work, Aspeth, but I know you're not a spy.
I suppose I should feel better at his confession, but it just reminds me that I'm in here with him to distract him away from what the others are doing. Because we need Magpie and her loose interpretation of guild rules instead of Hawk's strict one. I'm just trying to stay alive, I tell him in a soft voice. Everything I've done is toward that goal, because I really don't want to be killed over my father's poor choices.
No one's going to touch you.
He growls, and then he heaves me onto my back, my legs flying up.
No one except for me.
I suck in a breath as he rubs me through my pants. How is it that through layers of clothing, he knows exactly where to touch me and make it feel good? Whimpering, I squirm against his touch. Hawk, Hawk.
You want my fingers on your pussy?
He leans in close, continuing to rub me through the fabric, even as he hovers over me, my smaller form swallowed up against his.
You want me to make you feel good?
Nodding, I pull at the waist of my pants, fumbling with the belt until it's open and he can slide a hand inside. The moment he does, I cry out because it feels so incredible. His fingers are hot and calloused against my softer skin, and it shouldn't feel nearly as good as it does. But he pushes two fingers between my labia and rubs, framing my clit and teasing it from both sides. My legs draw up automatically, and he pushes his chest against my knee, pushing me deeper into the mattress. The position spreads me wide for him, and the sensations only grow more intense.
That's right, wife. I want your pussy to be wet around me all the time. I want you slick and aching the moment I walk into a room, because all you're going to think about when I'm around are the naughty things I'm going to do to you.
He strokes deeper, pushing into my core and making me gasp with the way he stretches me.
I'm going to make everything so good for you, Aspeth. All you have to do is let me.
I moan again, clinging to the shoulders of his jerkin. I'm your wife, I manage to pant out. I vowed this to you, to be yours.
You are mine, aren't you?
His words are a sultry whisper in my ear, his muzzle brushing against my skin, even as his fingers pump deeper inside me. I'm so wet I can hear squelching noises coming from my body with every thrust of his hand, but there's no energy in me to be embarrassed. Everything I am is focused on him touching me, on the pleasure of him making me come.
My pretty, sweet human wife. I shouldn't be nearly as possessive of you as I am, but I can't stop thinking about you, Aspeth. Can't stop thinking about how it's going to feel when I sink my knot into you, when I make you mine.
He drives into me with each word, leaving me whimpering.
It's the bull god's hand on me,
he whispers in my ear, his teeth grazing my skin.
The god's hand on my shoulder, telling me that you should be at my side or under me. That's where I need to keep my wife, to fill her belly with my seed and have her give me many sons, to knot her and then play with her clit for hours while you squirm on my cock, trapped against me.
Stars burst behind my eyes and I cry out, the climax hitting me like an avalanche. My legs curl up and he grunts with satisfaction, stroking his thumb against my clit even as his fingers work inside my body. He wrings the pleasure out for as long as possible, continuing to stroke and pet me until I'm shuddering and spent. I whimper when he pulls his fingers free of my body, again making a terribly wet noise, and watch as he licks them clean of my taste.
So fucking good, Aspeth. I could plant my muzzle there between your legs for days and not come up.
He looks down at me with such possessive lust that I swear I see a hint of red ringing his pupils. It's that hint of red that alarms me, and I press the back of my hand to my brow. I need a moment.
Of course you do.
He leans down and gently covers the tip of my nose with his mouth, so big that he nearly swallows the entire thing whole. What was that? I ask, curious.
A kiss.
His voice sounds gruff, as if he feels a bit foolish at having to explain himself.
I want to be a good husband to you, even if this is just convenience, even if we annul things after the conquest moon sails through. Until then, I want to be good to you.
I should leave it at that. I should acknowledge that it's sweet of him to say that, but because now you know I'm a holder's daughter. Hawk goes still. Immediately, I feel like an arse, like I pushed too far.
I suppose I deserved that,
Hawk says, moving to get off me. I reach up and caress his cheek, or at least what I think is his cheek, before he does. Neither of us deserves any of this.
It's as close to an apology as I'll get. I'm still hurt from the spy comment.
He gazes down at me and nips at my fingertips when I move them nearer to his mouth.
Is the trust between us gone, Aspeth?
Do we need to trust each other for the conquest moon? I ask, keeping my voice light. It seems a safer thing to ask than, did you ever truly trust me?
I suppose not.
But the moment is still ruined, and when he nuzzles my forehead and climbs off the bed, I let him go. He moves across the room and pours some water from a pitcher into a basin, washing up. I watch him, fixing my own clothing and torn between offering to touch him and wanting to check on Lark and the others. I'm aware he didn't come. Very aware. My body is throbbing, and I can see the outline of his cock pressing against his pants, and part of me wants to sink to my knees in front of him and touch him again, because I enjoyed it. I loved touching him, loved the power it gave me over him, loved watching him fall apart at my inexperienced caresses. It made me feel connected to him, and I want that again. But we're too busy lashing out at each other, and it's going to get worse before it gets better. Still, I can't stop myself as I move to his side. I slip my arms around his waist and press my cheek to his broad back, ignoring that I'm probably going to have to clean my spectacles again after all this face rubbing. We'll get this figured out, you and I. I promise. Hawk covers one of my hands with his bigger one.
I do want this to work between us, you know. Not just because of the conquest moon. I like you, Aspeth. I think you're smart and clever and driven. I've never met anyone like you. And I do want to try to make this work between us, however long we have together.
He rubs his thumb over the back of my hand.
I'll stay close to the nest until the moon's hand stops pressing on me. Stay close to you. We can spend more time together.
Oh no. This might be the absolutely wrong thing for our plans. But the guild, you're one of the only Taurians left in the city. What if they need you?
Then they'll have to hire someone else.
He half turns, pulling my hand to his mouth and kissing my knuckles.
I have a wife I have to prepare to take my knot.
I blush. Hearing that shouldn't be as thrilling as it is.
And I should wash up,
he says, and I could swear that red gleam is in his eyes again.
And then I'm happy to wash you too.
We need more water, I say brightly, detangling myself from his grasp and grabbing the pitcher. I'll get it and return. Be right back. He reaches for me, but I slink away before he can pull me into his arms again. I flash him a quick smile and hug the pitcher, practically running for the door. Squeaker follows behind me, no doubt traumatized after watching me get viciously and delightfully fingered on the bed. I pump fresh water in the kitchen and look around for the others. I can't stay out for long or Hawk will come looking for me. Gwenna? I whisper, pouring the water out of the pitcher and filling it slowly again just to waste time. Lark! Meridin? Kip? Someone? There's a scrambling sound, and then Locke bursts into the kitchen.
Spoke with my aunt, she pants. She's in. You keeping Hawk distracted?
Mostly. I eye the picture, now full. I'm about to head back in. We need to talk about plans, because he's going to stay close for the next few days, until the conquest moon is over.
She groans. That's a nightmare. Okay, I'll talk to my aunt again, figure something out. Did you hide the artifact?
Shit, it's still on a ribbon around my neck. Hawk didn't notice it because he only shoved a hand in my pants, but if he wants to bathe after this, he is for sure going to see it and ask questions. I hastily slip it off and hand it to Locke. Give it to Gwenna. Locke races away again.
Talk more in the morning.
If I don't collapse from stress first, sure.
33. Asbeth. One day before the conquest moon. All the requests were denied. Gwenna whispers to me over breakfast the next day. Immediately, my appetite curdles. Already? But that's so fast. Magpie has a bit of a reputation around town. She shrugs. It was a long shot anyhow. I talked to Lark and she said that her aunt has connections. She knows someone who can make her a false pass and someone who can take us down the drop for the right price. I stir my porridge, eyeing my husband from afar. He sits at the far end of the table from me, talking to the nestmaid, who's taking notes for food supplies for the week. We're on the cusp of the conquest moon, and apparently it affects Taurians in all ways, including hunger. He needs additional foodstuffs, some of which will be prepared in advance and deposited into our room so we don't have to leave the bed during the moon time, a fact that makes me blush so hard my face feels scalding. Everyone is going to be extremely aware of what we'll be doing in that time frame. It's no different from an arranged marriage, I remind myself, in which your husband would be keeping you in bed, trying to get you with an heir as quickly as possible. Everyone knows you're having sex then, too. We're getting the counterfeit pass tonight, Gwenna murmurs, holding a mug of tea up near her mouth and cupping her hands around it to hide her face. You're going to have to keep Hawk busy after dinner so he doesn't ask questions. Oh. I nod, mind racing, as I try to figure out how one distracts a surly Taurian who's already distracted by sex. The obvious answer is right there, but I also don't want to rouse his suspicions. The last time I reached out to touch Hawk on my own, he called me a spy. I need him to instigate things. I'll see what I can do. I ponder this all day, as we go through weapons drills and we switch up our positions. Lark takes over shield, bashing everything, and truly, she's far more enthusiastic about it than I ever was. Gwenna takes over navigation, and that leaves me with either being the healer or the gear master. I kind of like being the healer, Meriden tells me shyly, and I know a lot about tending to wounds, thanks to my time in the convent. Then you should stay the healer, I agree, because I don't know anything about wounds. Gearmaster is a fairly simple position. I manage the supplies and ensure we don't run out, which isn't something you can practice at the dorm. I work with a shortened quarterstaff instead, and try not to think about all the other things we could be doing. We're supposed to be learning more about artifacts and old Prel itself. Magpie suggested we head to the guild's library earlier today, since it should be deserted, as everyone in training is currently in the tunnels except us. Hawk said no. Said he was in too bad of a mood to be around the rest of the guild. He's definitely been on the surly side of things, I think, as I glance over at him working with Kip. The Slitherskin bounces along the walls and flings himself off Lark's shield as the two of them counter Hawk's heavy, insistent blows with a club. His temperament has gotten worse, as twice now the guild has sent messengers today. Most of the Taurians are gone from the city, which means that the retrieval and assistance missions are all falling to him. He turns them away, too, but I can see his scowl growing deeper with every person who arrives at the door. By the time we're done with the lessons for the day, he's in an absolutely foul mood, and the guild has sent a third messenger, only to be turned away. The others pile into the kitchen for snacks, and to escape his wrath, and I remain behind as he tidies up the training room. Gwenna told me to stick to his side today, and I intend to do so. I approach him delicately. You know I don't mind if you want to help out with the guild.
I said I would spend time with you.
He all but snarls. I recoil. Immediate remorse flashes over his face. He runs a hand down his muzzle, sighing heavily.
I'm sorry, Azbeth. It's not you, it's just... today, the guild, Magpie...
He gestures at our surroundings. And the conquest moon?
Like a fist around my cock at all times.
He admits.
And just as impossible to ignore.
He runs both hands down his long face.
I'm going to be a beast to live with until this passes.
I want to make a joke about how, as a woman, I know all about being cranky during certain times of the month. That I can relate to his foul temper being out of his control. But somehow, I don't think comparing my menstruation cycle to this will help cheer him any touchy as he is. If he were a woman, I'd offer him sweets. But Taurians are fussy eaters, and I don't even know if he likes sweets. Even so, feeding his mood isn't a bad idea. You know what you need? I tell him, moving to his side and sliding my hands around his arm. A nice hearty meal out and away from everything. That makes a smile quirk his hard mouth.
Are you offering to buy me dinner, Azbeth?
No, because I don't have 2 pennies to rub together, I grimace. I spent all of my coin getting here, but it would be nice to go out for a bit, just the two of us. Get to catch our breath and not have 5 other people breathing down our necks. It's the right thing to say. He pulls me close and nuzzles at my neck, sending shivers up my spine.
Change into regular clothes, hmm? I'll wash up and meet you at the front of the dorm in a few. I need to speak with Magpie.
I'm sure that's not going to help his mood, given that Magpie abandoned us early in the day because she had a headache. I'm not sure if it's alcohol-related or secret plan-related, but either way, it's bound to set Hawk off even more. But I nod and give him a saucy wink, watching as he leaves the room. It feels wrong to lie to him, but once again, I'm back to not having a choice. I need the other half of that ring, and I absolutely can't let it fall into Barnabas's hands. I need to get my father some way to protect our people, and soon, because all the teams scouring the tunnels are bound to find something to help Barnabas wage war on my family's hold. The moment he's gone, I race to Gwenna's quarters and knock on the door. She opens it a crack, and then, after seeing it's me, lets me inside. The others are in there, except for Magpie. I can't stay, I pant, because stairs are not part of our workout regimen. I rub the stays on my corset as my lungs heave against the confinement. Taking Hawk out for supper at a tavern somewhere to keep him out of your hair. Good, Locke says. We're meeting with Aunt Magpie and one of her friends later tonight to get the counterfeit pass. After that, we just have to wait until Hawk heads out again. I don't know if he's going to, I say. He's intent on sticking close to me due to the moon tomorrow. Which is both flattering and frustrating. Aunt Magpie will figure it out. Locke is fully confident. Just keep him occupied tonight while we work on this part of the plan. I nod and then hesitate. You guys won't go down without me, will you? Never, Gwenna reassures me. You're part of our 5. I trust her. The one who has issues trusting is Hawk, and unfortunately, I'm going to give him even more of a reason not to trust me. I hate that, but I'm low on choices. I could ask him to help us too. To ask him to break guild rules and help us steal from the guild right under their noses. But then I think about his hand, and how he already owes the guild far too much as it is. I won't bring him down with me. I know what he means when he says he struggles with caring too much. I meet my husband at the door to the dorms a short time later. Wearing a heavy dress of olive green with embroidered attached sleeves and a matching chemise that peeks out from artful gaps in all the fashionable spots. I always feel pretty in this dress, especially with a matching cloak over it,
but I suspect it's ruined by my spectacles, which magnify my eyes and make me look owlish. Hawk looks pleased at the sight of me, though, and I twirl for his approval. What do you think?
Luscious.
I'm both mortified and aroused. You're not supposed to call me that.
It's true. My mouth waters looking at you, because I know how juicy you are under all those skirts.
I move forward, pressing my fingers to his mouth to silence him, and all the while my breathing speeds up and need slides through my veins like liquid. Hush. We're going out tonight to distract you, not rushing back to our quarters. Much as I'd like to. I'm envisioning stripping him naked and rubbing his cock all over my face again, just because I liked the feel of his heated skin against mine, and how powerful and sexy it made me feel to touch him and give him pleasure, and how much it turned me on to do so. But Gwenna, Lark, and the others need us out of their hair if they're going to pull this off, and the moment Hawk hears someone leave the dormitory, he'll be wondering what's going on. So I run a hand down my husband's front. He's wearing the guild jerkin, fastened shut all the way to his throat, and his trousers are in guild colors as well. He's not wearing his sash, denoting his rank, but that's the only difference I'm seeing. I thought we were changing out of guild clothes for the day.
I realized that I didn't have anything else.
He murmurs, leaning in and rubbing his muzzle against the side of my neck.
And that anyone who sees a Taurian in Vast Warren is going to know I work for the guild anyhow. God, you smell amazing.
His hand steals to the front of my bodice, skimming over one of my nipples through the fabric, and I bite back a moan. Luckily for me, my stomach growls in that moment, and that brings Hawk's amorousness to a halt.
Hungry?
I could eat, I admit. I could also turn around and head back to our rooms and let him lick me all over. But the eating is part of the plan, and I need to focus on that. Hawk pulls my cloak from the nearby hook and places it over my shoulders.
Come then, I know a place. We'll have a nice meal, pretend the guild doesn't exist for a night, and then return later.
His muzzle dips against my throat again, and he whispers,
And I'll undress you like I'm unwrapping a present.
By Lady Asteria, when they say Taurians grow amorous with the moon's advent, they mean it. We've barely decided upon dinner, and I'm already flushed with heat, and my pulse is throbbing between my thighs. Hawk isn't much of a conversationalist as we head out into Vast Warren, and I'm grateful for that. It allows me to compose myself as we walk. But when we near the King's Onion, I give him a sharp look.
Not there.
He reassures me.
It's just along the way. I promise I'm not starting anything, Azbeth. Tonight is just about dinner and spending time together.
I slide my hand into the crook of his arm again and nod. True to his word, we stop at a tavern one street over. It's nearly deserted, with an elderly Taurian and his younger human wife behind the bar. The main tavern room is practically empty save for a few slitherskins near the fire, piled together with their houses stacked nearby. The barkeep recognizes Hawk and makes him a huge bowl of lentil and vegetable soup with a half loaf of crusty bread. My portion's only slightly smaller. He puts the tray down at our table and then leans over, his gaze on Hawk.
I know it's a difficult time to be a Taurian right now, son, but this is a nice establishment. If you feel the need to take the edge off, head to the alley, understand?
I should be mortified. Instead, it strikes me as funny, and I press my fingers to my lips, doing my best not to giggle. Hawk eyes me balefully as my shoulders shake.
You laugh,
he murmurs as the tavern owner saunters away.
But some can't help themselves. It's hard to serve a family meal when there's a bull rutting into his hand at the next table over.
That only makes me giggle harder. I'm sorry, I wheeze,
I know it's not funny. It's just, what if there are a lot of you who have the same need at the same time? Do you all go to the alley together?
If we do, we don't make eye contact.
He drools, eyeing me.
And thank you for that. My cock has sufficiently shriveled enough that I can eat in peace.
I have to wipe the tears of laughter from my eyes. I'm so sorry. I'm just picturing you staring at one another and angrily jerking off because your soup is getting cold and a stranger is standing too close.
Can't be much of a stranger if I've got my cock in hand.
But he smiles at me as he says it.
Hope the food is all right with you. The old Torian's from my home village, and his food reminds me of my mother's.
Oh. Hawk doesn't talk much of his home life or his family. I'd love to hear more. This is lovely. It's nice just to get away from the guild life, even if it's just for a few hours. I take a small bite of the food and try not to wince. It tastes like, well, grass. I swallow and take another bite, because if this is what Hawk likes, I want to appreciate it as well. I've never had this sort of flavor before. You eat this back where you came from? He's taking huge bites of the vegetable-laden soup, clearly loving it.
The village I grew up in was nothing but Torians. My parents were farmers, so we had a lot of dinners like this.
I take a bite of the crusty bread instead, because something tells me he's going to want to eat my share of soup, too. Do you miss your family? Hawk shrugs.
They could write. They don't. I'm not part of their life anymore. So no, I don't miss them.
I ponder this as I take another bite of bread. My mother died when I was very young, and the only family I had was my father and my grandmother. My grandmother is a society sort, and loves nothing more than a party. We've never seen eye to eye. She actually hates my spectacles, and I was told not to wear them around her. He huffs with annoyance.
So she'd rather you be blind than unfashionable? She's an idiot.
When he puts it that way, it does sound exceedingly stupid. My father has been largely absent. I think he entertained the thought of another wife for a while, but nothing ever came to fruition, and he seemed content to have me be his heir and fool around with his mistress instead. We've never been close. I think I see him perhaps twice a year, despite the fact that we live in the same hold. Or rather, we did, I shrug. So when you say you're not close to your family, I understand. Hawk finishes his soup, and I nudge mine toward him. He immediately takes it with a grateful smile and trays me the bread.
It's not that I'm lonely. The guild keeps me busy. I'm close to the other Torians who work here in the city. I have Magpie.
I can't say much positive about Magpie. She's too erratic and absent.
Once she was a great mentor,
he says, as if reading my sour thoughts.
I know she struggles now, but a decade ago she was clever and daring, and no one could match her success rate. She seemed to know instinctively where to dig, and we'd come up with treasures more often than not.
Did she use a dowsing rod then, too? I tease.
A dowsing rod?
His brow furrows.
Of course not. Those are fairy tales. A prank played on fledglings to keep them occupied.
Just curious. I've heard, that some use them.
Foolery.
Hawk sounds cranky at the thought.
The best thing you can do is show your students the best places to dig, not to rely on sticks and magic. You look for places that would have lots of artifacts, old warehouses or libraries. You look for merchant shops that specialized in the arts. And if you're really lucky, you'll stumble upon a wizard's shop. But just using a stick?
He makes a face.
That's a setup to fail.
He's not wrong. I just can't help but wonder if Magpie truly wanted us to fail, or if she was lazy. There's no way she could have known about Gwenna's bloodline, if even Gwenna had no idea. And we don't know that the dowsing rod actually led us to the ring. It could have been a fluke. Gwenna could have had shaky hands. Something. So may I ask you what your name was before you joined the guild? Who were you before you were Hawk? And what made you pick that name? He eyes me.
What, you think you can slide your soup over to me and suddenly I'll answer every question you ever had?
I flutter my lashes at him, even though I probably look ridiculous through my spectacles. Yes? The hard edges of his smile turn up just a little.
Maybe we order another round of soup and I can keep talking.
Grinning, I take another huge bite of bread, which truly is delicious for all that it's dry. I guess butter would be weird to minotaurs. I think that sounds delightful.